entire propaganda ki article 370 ki wajah se there's no development there is completely wrong. Yes, for a strife-torn state, Jammu and Kashmir has actually done much, much better on a lot of parameters.
Hi, I'm Grishma Kuttar, and this is Voices from the Lockdown, a First Post podcast. In conversation with us today is Sana Iltija, the daughter of former Chief Minister Mehbooba Mufti, who fought a legal battle to meet her mother after she was taken into preventive detention. Mehbooba Mufti has been in solitary confinement since August 5th. Iltija, a new political system is set to emerge on the 31st of October. The state of Jammu and Kashmir will no longer exist. Almost everybody from the political leadership of Kashmir are under preventive detention. There are also talks about how the ruling BJP government at the center is in the process of facilitating a new leadership to take over in Kashmir. What do you think will happen in the days to come? And where do you see mainstream political leaders like your own mother after October 31st?
Yeah. Well, I think first of all, you mentioned something on the lines of the government of India trying to, you know, prop a new line of leadership in Jammu and Kashmir.
Yeah.
Frankly, I don't think if leaders are made in the confines of a room and decided by, you know, even if it's the Prime Minister and the Home Minister, with due respect to them, I don't think if they have the right to impose any leaders on the people of Kashmir, whether it's the Muftis, whether it's the Abdullahs, whether it's any, family or political party, I think people have the right to decide who they want. So as far as the new leadership is concerned, if they have the mandate of the people, whenever elections are fought and if people decide to elect them, that's a different thing. But I don't think if you can impose a new set of people on Kashmiris, I think it's their right to decide who they elect to power, elect to office. And as far as the mainstream leadership is concerned, I think they will find themselves in a dilemma because New Delhi has purposely, intentionally, obliterated, all distinction between separatists and mainstream leaders. People like my mother, people like Omar Abdullah, Farooq Abdullah Saab, who swore on the Constitution of India, they've intentionally been lumped with separatists. And I think that's a very sinister agenda. But I would say that the only silver lining about this entire operation, the manner it was done, is that perhaps for a change, I think it will unite all Kashmiri parties. And I think today they are on the same page as far as the future of Jammu and Kashmir is concerned.
Iltija, you were yourself under preventive detention for a few weeks. You fought it out in the courts to meet your mother. And for a few weeks, you've also been operating Mehbooba Mufti's Twitter account. How is she,
right,
if I may ask? When was the last time you visited Kashmir and how is Kashmir?
As you know, I was under illegal detention. And it was only after I wrote a very public open letter to the Home Minister of India that I was released and I was allowed to travel. And, there is no sense of law in the valley right now. And I feel like the government of India currently has no moral or legal restraints. All the institutions, the courts, ED, NIA, even the CBI, they're all being used by the government to target, potential opponents. So, I just feel that there is no sense of, they have no sense of legal or moral restraints right now. I spent some time in Kashmir. I just got back the day before. And the entire city is in a state of limbo, You feel like the city is gripped by a sense of fear and, there's an atmosphere of repression and you feel so oppressed just to be there. And I also had the chance to spend some time with my mother. And like every other Kashmiri, she feels a deep sense of betrayal and shock and anger. And I think that, it's still taking time for this to seep in what the government of India has done and the manner in which they did. They showed utter disregard and contempt for Kashmiris. Had they been concerned about Kashmiris at all, there would have been some sort of outreach, some sort of engagement. I'm not even talking about an engagement with politicians, pro-India politicians, but speak to somebody, speak to civil society members with what they have no tolerance. The government of India has no tolerance. So, a couple of really old senior citizens, ladies, protested. And what were they doing? They were just holding placards and they also were arrested. So the government threshold, for dissent, for intolerance is zero right now. And for a country like ours that prides itself on, on its democracy, on its, we're the largest democracy in the world, I think it's a crying shame.
Right. Iltija, another thing is, in his August 5th speech, right, Home Minister Amit Shah made many allegations regarding why Article 370 needs to be abrogated. Right? He said, and I quote, because of Article 370, democracy never took root in Jammu and Kashmir, and no socio-economic infrastructure could come up. Article 370 is the root cause of terrorism, corruption, and poverty. I call upon the opposition to debate and discuss why the benefits of development were not allowed to reach the common people of JNK. The politics of vote bank has looted the youth of the state for over 70 years, unquote. The PM and many from the ruling BJP have been echoing similar sentiments for a long time now. How do you respond to these allegations?
Well, first of all, Article, you know, they have this really strong, and, you know, I know you're from the media and I don't mean to offend you, but unfortunately, largely most sections of the media is very pliable and they're very statist in the sense that whatever the line is taken by the government, they parrot it. And there's this entire propaganda that's unleashed on different channels, on social media platforms, through electronic media, through print media. But if you have the patience to understand, Article 370 has absolutely nothing to do with development. Article 370 was the bridge that connected Jammu and Kashmir to the rest of the country. And let me tell you that if you have the time and patience, if you look at the development indices of Jammu and Kashmir, it's actually placed much better than any of the other states in India. The Ministry of Health and Social Welfare, they just did, you know, a poll was recently done, a study was done, and under that survey, they found that 3 out of 5 children in India die due to malnutrition. And the top 5 states in which this is prevalent are all BJP-ruled states. You have states like UP, you have states like Bihar, you have states like Tripura, Assam, which are all led by BJP. So, you know, this entire propaganda ki Article 370 ki wajah se there's no development there is completely wrong. Yes, for a strife-torn state, I think Jammu and Kashmir has actually done much, much better on a lot of parameters. So, you know, to link 370 with development, there is, you know, even when you talk about FDI, Jammu and Kashmir is the only state where FDI is not allowed. So private companies have always had that monopoly where they've had that choice to invest. If they haven't chosen to invest, it's because there's been a very fragile sense of peace in the state. And you cannot just link that to a constitutional provision.
See, on one hand, the ruling BJP is saying that abrogation of Article 370 is crucial for any kind of development in the state of Jammu and Kashmir, like we've already discussed. On the other hand, many from the valley term this as a method to further repress the people of Kashmir. Political voices within JNK look at this as a move to dismantle the only Muslim majority state in India. How would you define the predicament that Kashmir is in now?
I think currently Kashmir has been reduced to an Orwellian dystopia. The government of India wants to intercept our thoughts. They want to control how we feel. You can contain traffic on a road, but you can't contain sentiments. And if people have this anti-India sentiment, then by oppressing them further, you're only going to alienate them. And, you know, you talk about development, that's how they're trying to legitimize it. But somebody who couldn't get development into the rest of the country, in 2014, they kept saying, Sabka Saath, Sabka Vikas. When you couldn't get that into the rest of the country, our GDP is at 5%. I am sorry, but the government of India has forfeited the right to talk about the development argument. And of course, the real reason for doing this is to engineer demographic changes. As you know, Jammu and Kashmir was, you know, the only Muslim majority state in India. So what they really want to do is engineer demographic changes. And development is merely a front to do what they want to do. And you know who was recently appointed as the lieutenant governor. This man has known to play a very active role, and he helped put pressure on the witnesses of the Gujarat riots. So, you know, the kind of message that you're sending to Kashmiris is that here is this man, he is going to control everything in Kashmir, and this is the same man who was complicit in, the butchering of Muslims during the Gujarat riots. So there is a complete atmosphere of fear and repression that they want to create. But I want to tell them that Kashmiris have been very resilient and we're not going to back down. And, you know, we're not going to accept what you've done to us. And, you know, sooner or later, you're going to have to end this reign of repression that you've unleashed on us.
The PDP was in an alliance with the ruling BJP government. The leaders of the National Conference met with the Prime Minister just days before August 5th. There's a lot being said about how the political leadership of Kashmir is by itself responsible for the state that Kashmir is in now. Would you agree to this?
you cannot just hold the mainstream, you know, they've become very easy targets and I'd say scapegoats. It's very easy for the media to say that, oh, NC and PDP ruled by two families are responsible for the mess. Jammu and Kashmir has been in trouble, and this trouble that, you know, we find ourselves in is because of, you know, the policies that were carried out by the government of India. Now, whether it's been Congress or BJP, Congress always adopted, you know, policies of repression. They legitimized state repression. They used force. You've had human rights violations. You've had, you know, a lot of violence. And nobody really wants to engage with the people of Kashmir. But for today, for you to extricate, you know, the mainstream, local mainstream parties and place the blame on them, I think it's terribly unfair, because India is a federal, you know, you have a federal government where the government of India enjoys, you know, centralized power. The state governments don't have enough power to decide what course, you know, the states will take individually. So it's so immature and silly to shift all the blame on these two, three political parties. I think, you know, it's terribly unfair.
Okay. Finally, where do you see, you know, yourself and the people of Jammu and Kashmir post 31st, Iltija? What do you think is, I mean, it's just a few days left for the 31st, right? And things continue to remain in a limbo, in the lockdown continues. Where do you see yourself and the people of Kashmir after 31st?
Well, I don't think if whatever's happened is, you know, etched in stone. And we can change it. And I think what Kashmiris need to do is galvanize, you know, themselves and, you know, protest against this peacefully and not accept this. Because whatever has been done was without our consent. The governor of any state is a constitutional head. He does not represent the legislature. So what they've done is absolutely illegal and we should not accept it, you know. This is no solution to our problems. If you're going to turn Jammu and Kashmir into a UT because you're saying there are problems of corruption and everything, then, you know, there are lots of BJP-ruled states in India which are mired in problems of corruption. You have mob lynching. So are you going to start converting all those states into UTs? I don't think so. This is, you know, about convenience. They had elections in Haryana, Maharashtra, so they thought this will reap political dividends. And you can see for yourself, the people have rejected, you know, this agenda of hyper-nationalism and, you know, dredging up national security at every election. It's not going to work. And I think people of Kashmir, Jammu and Kashmir, should not accept this.
That is all from this episode of Voices from the Lockdown. For previous episodes, visit the First Post channel on audioboom.com.